Tonight we're doing point number 6 in the outline, the gospel record, history, or mythology. This is one of the two most important points in the presentation. God exists, number 3, and the New Testament is historically reliable, number 6. The challenge to the reliability of gospels is great today. 82% of the Jesus Seminar say that it's not authentic. That is, the words of Jesus that we have in the red letter edition of the Gospels are not authentic. 16 more say that it's doubtful. That means 82 and 16 is 98% total of Jesus' words are in doubt. And 0% of the Gospel of John is authentic. They think the Gospel of Thomas, an apocryphal gospel from the second century, is more reliable than John is. Remember Da Vinci? The Bible is a product of man, my dear, not of God. Man created it as a historical record. History has never had a definitive version of the book. Many have made a trade in delusions, false miracles, and deceiving a stupid multitude. Now we have in North Carolina, Bart Ehrman teaching at our university, our tax dollars going to teach that these New Testament manuscript copies all differ from one another in many thousands of places. These copies differ from each other in so many places, we don't even know how many differences there are. Mark didn't say the same thing as Luke. John is different from Matthew, not the same. Paul is different from Acts. And James is different from Paul, misquoting Jesus. Then we have James Tabor, University of North Carolina, Charlotte, saying the Gospels have errors and contradictions. Miracle stories are not true, including the virgin birth and the resurrection, because women do not get pregnant without a male, ever. And dead bodies don't rise. Not if one is clinically dead, as Jesus surely was after Roman crucifixion, 3 days in a tomb. So they don't believe in the miracles. They think the Gospels are not inspired, are full of contradictions. What says the evidence? The evidence says that the documents are copied reliably and the events were recorded accurately. And these two points support together the reliability of the Gospels. Let's take the first one first. The documents are copied accurately. The Bible in our hand is an accurate copy of the original Bible. That's what this point has to say. How do we know? Well, we got more manuscripts, earlier manuscripts, more accurately copied manuscripts than any other book from the ancient world. So if the New Testament can't be trusted, you got to rule out every history department, every classics department, every university, and every school in the entire world. Let's take them one by one. This chart illustrates the reliability of the New Testament documents. The kind of orange color there indicates how many manuscripts there are of the various books, New Testament, Homer, Demosthenes, Herodotus, Plato, Tacitus, Caesar, and Pliny. And the gray indicates the time between the date of the manuscript's composition and the earliest copies. So let's take a look at it. What do we have in the New Testament? Almost 5,700 Greek handwritten manuscripts. 5,700 manuscripts. What's the most for any other book from the ancient world? Homer, 643. Demosthenes, 200. Most other books, 7, 8, 20, 10. We got way more manuscripts than any other book. How about the gap between the time the last book was written and the first copy? New Testament, about 25 years. Other books, on the average, 1,000 years. Homer is short with only 500 years, but some are 1,400, 1,200, 1,000, and so on. So what we have is there are more Greek manuscripts, 5,700 New Testament manuscripts, most other books 10 or 20 on the average. There are more early translations. There are over 19,000 early translations in Old Syriac, Latin, Coptic, Latin Vulgate, and others. Now, if you add 19,000 translations to 6,000 Greek manuscripts, 5,700, this totals 25,000 copies of the New Testament in whole or in part. Nothing else in the ancient world even comes close to this. Not even close. In fact, a third element you can add, the quotations. If you got rid of all the manuscripts, all the translations and went to your library and got out the Antonicene Fathers, about this many books from a time before the Council of Nicaea, basically the first 400 years of the church history, and you looked at Justin Martyr, Irenaeus, Clement of Alexandria, Origen, Tertullian, Hippolytus, Eusebius, and you counted the quotes, which somebody has done, and I have checked in general because there are indices in the back of these books, you'll find that there are 36,289 quotations. That's every verse in the New Testament except 11, most of which are in the book of 3 John. When did you quote 3 John last? Only one chapter. You probably don't even know a verse from 3 John. It wasn't that they rejected it, it's just they had no occasion to quote it. So we had manuscripts, translations, quotations of the New Testament like no other book in the world. Let's compare. There are earlier manuscripts, 25 to 150 year gap between the first partial manuscript and whole books. Most other books, a 1,000 year gap. Here's what we have. Starting around 117 AD, we got five verses from John 18. We have the Bodmer Papyri, 200 AD. That's most of the Gospel of John, 1st and 2nd Peter and Jude, whole books. Then we have the Chester Beatty Papyri from 250 AD, nearly all the New Testament books. On top of that, Vaticanus manuscript, 325 to 350 AD, most of the Old and New Testament. So there's no comparison between the amount of manuscripts and the date of manuscripts between the New Testament and other books. How accurate were these books? How accurately were they copied? Well, judged by words, the New Testament is about 95 to 97% plus accurately copied. Judged by content, about 98.33 to 99.9. Now, 99.9 is better than Ivory Soap, which is only 99.44% pure. A.T. Robertson, the great New Testament scholar, said, "The real concern is with a thousandth part of the entire text. That means 99.9% accurately copied." The New Testament has more manuscripts, earlier manuscripts, more accurately copied manuscripts than any book from antiquity. The number of manuscripts of the New Testament, of early translations from it, and of quotations from it in the oldest writers of the church, is so large that it is practically certain that the true reading of every doubtful passage is preserved in some one or the other of these ancient authorities. This can be said of no other book in the world, which is an amazing thing when you come to think of a book that's 2,000 years old. And why does Bart Ehrman charge about the manuscript errors that you can't trust the Bible? Well, what he says is very misleading, and let me illustrate why. Suppose you got a email message like this. You have won $10 million. Would you collect your money? Of course you would, because the second letter is an O, and that means you, and that means me, and thank you very much for $10 million, right? In other words, even though there's an error there, you know what the message is. The message is you're a whole lot richer, and the way the stock market is running, you would appreciate that very much. Now, if you got a message like this, you'd be even more sure. But I ask you this question, how can you be more sure when there's more errors? Because the error is in a different spot. The error now is on the U. And now I know that the second letter is an O, because it appears there. And if you got a message that read like that, no matter how many errors you make in that, the more errors you make, the more sure you are of what the original said. Even with the mistake in it, 100% of the message comes through. Now, you'll hear people like Bart Ehrman say, well, there are thousands of errors in the Bible. Well, look, they count as an error, spelling irregularities. So if there's a spelling irregularity that occurs in 3,000 manuscripts, that's counted as 3,000 errors. It doesn't even change the meaning of the word, let alone the sentence or the truth of it. The more errors, the more sure you are of the message. Statistics lie and you can fill in the blank. Suppose you looked at manuscripts and they had something like this. One manuscript said, you have won $10 million. The second one said, thou hast won $10 million. And the third one said, y'all have won $10 million. Now notice, and this is how Bart Ehrman counts errors. Of the 27 letters in line 2, only 7 are the same in line 3, the ones in blue. Yet the message is 100% identical. That means you have 74% difference in letters and 0% difference in meaning. So when you read these books, they're deceiving you by talking about all of the errors. Those are errors in form, but not in content for the most part. And with the many differences, 100% of the message comes through. The New Testament variations are of this kind. So sure, there are a lot of variations, but they don't affect the central message of the Bible. There are no copyist errors, really variant readings, they should be called, that affect any doctrine of the New Testament. Conclusion. The New Testament has more manuscripts, earlier manuscripts, more accurately copied manuscripts than any other book from the ancient world. That leads us to our second point. If the documents have been copied accurately, and so we have in our hands an accurate copy of the original, were the original documents recorded accurately? Were the events and words recorded in the originals reliable? And that we need to spend a little more time on. The reliability of the New Testament writings, and now the reliability of the New Testament writers. Here again, there were more writers, earlier writers, and more accurate writers than any other book from the ancient world. So if you're going to rule out the New Testament, you have to rule out all of ancient history. Nothing from the ancient world comes to us with as many writers, as earlier writers, and as accurate writers as the New Testament. New Testament has 9 writers: Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Paul, Peter, James, Jude, and the writer of Hebrews. If the writer of Hebrews is Paul, which it doesn't say, there would be 8. They wrote 27 books. Now stop right there. There's almost nothing from the ancient world that comes to us on the basis of 2 or 3 authors. And there's nothing that comes to us with 8 or 9 writers writing 27 different books. So we have way more evidence than we need. How much evidence do you need to convict someone of a capital crime? Mouth of 2 or 3 witnesses, every word should be established. Most other events have only 2 or 1 writer. There were eyewitness writers, there were contemporary writers, and there were writers within 20 years of the events. Comes to the New Testament, much of it is based on eyewitness testimony. I'll show you who was and who wasn't. And the rest of it, they were contemporaries of the eyewitnesses, the very best kind of evidence you can get. And they started writing within 20 years of the events. Now, just to show you how that works, most of us who are old enough know exactly where we were the day that President Kennedy was assassinated. And if you were alive and, let's say, 5 years old or more, 1963, you know exactly where you were. It's etched right in your memory. Why? It's an impact event. Imagine Jesus, Son of God, impact event. Very easy. 1963, we're now 45 years from that event. I can remember things word for word that I heard in 1950. I remember a joke I heard, why old maids can't fascinate because they only have 7 buttons. You know, the stupid joke that I heard, but I remember it word for word from 58 years ago. There were more writers. There were 9 New Testament writers. Matthew was an apostle. Mark was an associate of the apostle Peter. Luke was an associate of the apostle Paul. John was an apostle of Jesus. Paul was an apostle, not one of the 12, but an apostle. James, a brother of Jesus, wrote a book. Peter was an apostle. Jude was the brother of James. Hebrews was written by an associate of an apostle because it says it was confirmed to us by the apostles, those who heard him. And he knew, chapter 13, Timothy. Mentions Timothy by name. Now, some question these, but early testimony attributes them to the persons whose name they bear. Modern critical scholars say, well, Matthew didn't write Matthew. Well, they don't know. The early fathers who were closer to the events said he did, and the book bears his name, and we've never found any manuscripts that didn't have his name on it, so I think it's a good bit that he did it. After all, he's got the longest discourses. What did he do for a living? Kept records. He was a tax collector, so you would expect him to have those. Here's the eyewitness evidence in the New Testament. The man who saw it, the crucifixion, has given testimony. His testimony is true. The person who wrote the Gospel of John, was an eyewitness. There is the disciple who testified to these things and who wrote them down, John 21:24. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we've seen with our eyes, which we've looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. Does that sound like somebody who was right there on the scene? Book of Acts. God has raised this Jesus to life and we are all witnesses of the fact. Peter and John replied, for we cannot help speaking about what we have seen and heard. We are witnesses of everything he did in the country of the Jews in Jerusalem. They killed him, hanging him on a tree, but God raised him from the dead on the third day and caused him to be seen, visible to other people with the naked eye. 500 eyewitnesses of the resurrection. Jesus was buried. He was raised the third day. He appeared to Peter, then to the 12. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers at the same time, most of whom are still living. He also appeared to me. So here you have eyewitnesses, 251 plus, are still alive when Paul wrote 1 Corinthians. Now, even the critical scholars believe that Corinthians was written 55-56 A.D. Jesus was crucified in 33. From 33 to 55 is 22 years. So we have books even accepted by these negative critics that come within 22 years of the event that point to 500 people who are still living who saw the events themselves. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us. Now, the Greek word for many can mean two or more. I believe he's referring to Matthew and Mark that were written before his time. And Luke is saying, and Luke had to be written, we'll see later, by 61 A.D., there were at least two Gospels written before mine, and they were written up by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the Word. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good also to me to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you've been taught. Now, there's a real challenge. There's a challenge to the critics. Here is a person who is claiming in 61 A.D. that he is writing an account based on eyewitnesses and he's carefully investigated it. All you have to do is investigate his writings to find out if he's reliable. We'll find out later that he's the most reliable historian from the first century. No one's writings have been better confirmed than Dr. Luke. Hebrews. How shall we escape if we ignore such a great salvation? This salvation, which was first announced by the Lord, was confirmed to us by those who heard him. Peter was an eyewitness. We did not follow cleverly invented stories. It's the Greek word mythos for myth. When we told you about the power and coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, but we were eyewitnesses of his majesty. I was there. To the elders among you, I appeal to you as a fellow elder, a witness of Christ's suffering. Remember, he was standing afar off. John and Mary and the women were up by the cross. Peter was standing in the back of the crowd. Now, there are numerous scholars today who hold that the New Testament is based in eyewitness testimony. These are just some of them. Balcom, Richard Balcom, Jesus and the Eyewitness. Craig Blomberg wrote two excellent books, Historical Reliability Gospels, and then John. F.F. Bruce, two books, New Testament Documents, Are They Reliable? Jesus and Christian Origins Outside the New Testament. D.A. Carson and Doug Moo, New Testament Introduction. William Lane Craig, Knowing the Truth About the Resurrection. C.H. Dodd, History and the Gospel. Donna Guthrie, New Testament Introduction. Gary Habermas, Historical Jesus. Colin Hemmer, we'll speak about later, Acts in the Setting of Hellenic History. Frederick Kenyon, who we quoted earlier, Our Bible and Ancient Manuscripts. Etta Linneman, who spoke here at the church back in 1993 or 94, is a converted Bultmannian scholar, liberal scholar, whose students witnessed to her. She got saved, she scrapped her books, and she's written several books. One is called Is There a Synoptic Problem with Matthew, Mark, and Luke? And her answer is no, they were eyewitnesses. Bruce Metzger, The Texts of the New Testament, and N.T. Wright, whom you see quoted on TV, usually in these programs they have a token conservative, and he's often the one they pick. Now, here's the evidence that Luke wrote his gospel. Dr. Luke, an educated man, who said, I was very careful in putting this together. Here's the evidence that he wrote the book of Acts by 62 A.D. No mention of Jerusalem. If you're writing a book on the life of President Kennedy and you don't mention his assassination, nothing. When are you writing it? Before 1963. Because surely you would mention it if he had already died. There's no reference to the Jewish wars that began in 66. If you're writing a book on the life of Martin Luther King, and there's no mention of his death, his assassination, when are you writing it? Before he was assassinated. No hint of Nero's persecution, which started in 65. It wiped out Peter and Paul and many of the apostles. No hint when the book of Acts was written. The apostle Paul is still alive, in fact. In the last chapter, 28, he's alive receiving people there in jail in Rome. The apostle James is still alive. Now we know from Josephus, who was a first century Jewish historian in his book Antiquities, that James died in 62 AD. But he is mentioned as still alive when the book of Acts is written. So it had to be written by 62. But Luke was written before Acts was. Acts 1:1 says the former book. Same kind of Greek, same difficult Greek written by the same person. Matthew and Mark wrote before Luke, so Matthew and Mark had to be written by 60 A.D. Here's a New Testament timeline. Jesus died about 33. Shortly after he died, there were creeds that were formulated. Paul mentions one in 1 Corinthians, that he died, that he rose, that he appeared, has a creedal form to it. There's another one in 1 Timothy 3. God was manifest in the flesh, seen of angels, preached on the world, received up to glory. So he had creeds to go way back to there. And Paul referred in 1 Corinthians 15 to what I received. So he had received stuff that was in existence before him. Now he's talking in 1 Corinthians in 55 A.D. of having received stuff before his time, which scholars tell us now goes back right to the time of the cross, 33 A.D. At any rate, you have Acts written by 62, Luke written by 61, Mark written before that, so you have the Gospels written between 50 and 60. Romans, 1 and 2 Corinthians, and Galatians written between 55 and 61, and most of the New Testament written before 70 A.D., just contrary to the liberal scholars who say it was all written between 70 and 100 A.D., could not have been. What's very important to note, that any time here between 30 and 70 plus is the age of the eyewitnesses, that these documents are contemporaries of the eyewitnesses of the time. Evidence for early authorship. There were other people who lived in the first century who were quoting the New Testament. Epistle of Barnabas, Epistle of Clement, Polycarp. Polycarp was a disciple of the Apostle John. So there's a direct connection with the apostles, the Didache, or teaching of the Twelve, Shepherd of Hermas, Epistle of Ignatius, Ancient Homily, Fragment of Papias. Even critical scholars agree that First Corinthians was written 55 and 56. Acts was written by 62. Luke by 61. No mention of the destruction of Jerusalem or the death of James. Any date in the first century is too early for myth to develop. It is a known fact that myths take two full generations to develop. Why? You got to wipe out all the eyewitnesses. Because as eyewitnesses are alive, people can't get away with saying, thus and thus happened when it didn't happen. I had that happen in my lifetime already. I was a witness at the Scopes II trial, and there are people who wrote books on a basis of newspaper reports that weren't true, and I had to write them and correct it. They can't get away with it. Well, eyewitnesses are still alive. Even the span of two generations is too short. The writings of the Greek historian Herodotus enable us to test the rate at which a legend accumulates. The test shows that even the span of two generations is too short. That would be 80 years, two 40-year generations, to allow legendary tendencies to wipe out the hardcore of historical fact. And surely the death and resurrection are the hardcore of that historical fact. If you were writing a myth, would you do this? In the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, when Pontius Pilate was governor of Judea, Herod Tetrarch of Galilee, and a brother Philip Tetrarch of Iturea and Trachonitis, and Lysanias Tetrarch of Abilene, during the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas, word of God came to John, son of Zechariah, in the desert. Now, you wouldn't do that. Why? Because all you have to do is go out and check. Note, an exact date is given. You don't want to do that. 29 A.D. By the way, we know exactly when Jesus began his ministry. We don't know when he was born. Why? God wanted to emphasize his ministry, not his birth. He's probably born around 4 B.C. All eight people are known from history. Now, what if the scholars looked at these names and they couldn't find any of them anywhere else? What would that say about the credibility of Luke? In fact, all were known to live at this exact time. Well, if they found them, but some lived here and some lived there, but none of them in 29 A.D. This is not a once upon a time story. It's accurate history pinpoint to the very year. How does that compare with Alexander the Great? He was probably the most famous person in the ancient world other than Jesus. What do we have for his life? How do we know he lived, conquered the world, etc.? Contemporary sources, none. Zero. Zip, nil, nada. 100 years later, fragments. 300 to 500 years later, several history. Can you imagine what the liberal scholars would do with the Bible if all we had was 300 to 500 years later some people lived that told these stories? Imagine what that would do to the credibility of Christianity. Nobody doubts Alexander the Great based on a couple historians 300 to 500 years later. And the New Testament, we have contemporary writers, nine of them writing 27 books, and they doubt. Why? Well, you can decide for yourself. The Dean of Archaeology, this is the top archaeologist of the 20th century, William F. Albright. He started as a liberal, and he ended up a conservative just by looking at the evidence. In my opinion, every book of the New Testament was written by a baptized Jew between the 40s and the 80s of the first century AD, very probably sometime between 50 and 75. Now, here is a former liberal scholar who's saying, within 17 years of the time Jesus died, they began to write the New Testament. The Death of God theologian, Bishop Robinson, he was an atheist. He started the Death of God movement. But before he died, he wrote another book, His first book was called Honest to God. This one should have been Honest to the Facts. It's called Redating the New Testament. He said Matthew was written between 40 and 60, Mark between 45 and 60, Luke 57 to 60, and John 40 to 65. 40 is 7 years after Jesus died. The Gospels are being written. An atheist, critic, scholar. Confessions of a former critic, Etta Linneman. She was a student of Bultmann and Debelius, two most famous liberal scholars. She wrote a book on the parables from a higher critical point of view. She was saved in between. She wrote a book, Historical Criticism of the Bible, Methodology or Ideology, telling how she was converted and how she trashed her former books, and then wrote a book defending the historicity of the Gospels. Accepted dates of 1 Corinthians. Everything we need to know is right here. Jesus died for our sins. He rose from the dead according to the Scriptures. He appeared unto Peter. He appeared unto the 12. He appeared to 500 people. All of it within 22 years of the events. So there were more accurate writers as attested by the early date of their writings, possibly 40 to 60. Probably 55 to 60, certainly during the lifetime of the eyewitnesses, and much earlier than any other books from the ancient world, compare Alexander the Great. In addition to that, suppose you wipe out the four Gospels. Suppose you let the higher critics just have their fun. The Jesus people sit around with little colored beads voting. I think they should use marbles because they lost their marbles. But at any rate, suppose you let them sit around and vote what Jesus said and what he didn't say. Between 50 and 61 A.D., 17 and years and following, they mention 31 events from the Gospels. You can reconstruct the whole essence of the Gospel from the writings of Paul that they do accept. I don't know why it doesn't occur to them that they are giving away with the left hand what they deny with the right hand. Here are the things you can reconstruct from Paul's writings. Jewish ancestry of Jesus, Davidic descent, came from line of David, virgin birth, lived under Jewish law, had brothers, 12 disciples, one of whom was named James, some had wives, that Paul knew Peter and James, that Jesus was poor, he was humble, he was meek, he was abused by others, he had teaching on divorce and remarriage, his view on paying wages of ministers, his view on paying taxes, his command to love one's neighbor, Jewish ceremonial uncleanness, Jesus' titles of deity, be vigilant in view of his second coming, which would be like a thief in the night. He instituted the Lord's Supper, lived a sinless life, died on a cross, specifically by crucifixion, instigated by the Jews, was buried, resurrected the third day, and had post-resurrection appearances to all the apostles, to the others, 500 of them, and today is at the right hand of God. 31 things that we learn from the Gospels, even if we didn't have any Gospels, just the epistles and the ones that the critics accept from 50 to 61 A.D. would be sufficient to establish Christianity. There were more accurate writers tested by early date, early confirmation from Paul's writings, 31 events, and the authentic nature of their writings. Suppose you didn't have anything. Erase everything I just said. You didn't have anything, any of this evidence. You're walking down the beach and you pick up a book. And it happens to be in the New Testament and you start to read it. Could you know that that book was true just by the internal evidence? I've given you external evidence. Yes, because the account is vivid, fresh, unembellished, detailed, self-incriminating, diverse, but mutually confirming. All of that equals is historical, not mythological. The authentic nature of their writings. They made no attempt to harmonize their accounts. Matthew says there was one angel at the tomb, and John says there were two. Now, if they were in collusion, they would work that out. The Gospels say Judas hanged himself. The book of Acts says he fell headlong and his bowels burst out. If they were in collusion, they would work that out. Made no attempt to harmonize. That's what you expect from real eyewitnesses. They included material that put Jesus in a bad light, like his brothers didn't believe in him. His relatives thought he was nuts, and they came to carry him away. Now, if you were writing a story to try and put Jesus in a good light, you certainly didn't do it. They left many difficult passages in the text, like, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life in you. I'd have left that one out. Sounds like a cannibal, you know. They retained many self-incriminating details. The people who wrote the book said, we were dull, we were dense, we were dumb. We had Jesus teaching us for 3.5 years and we didn't remember this until after the resurrection. Many self-incriminating details. They included many demanding sayings of Jesus. Unless you hate your parents, you don't love me. Let the dead bury the dead. Come down and follow me. They distinguished their words from Jesus. You can tell a red letter edition of the Bible which are Jesus' words, even though they didn't use quote marks. You can tell which ones are his and which ones are theirs. They did not deny their testimony under threat of death. Usually if people are lying, sooner or later somebody's going to break. Somebody is going to spill the beans, as in the Watergate case, for example. They claimed their record was based on eyewitnesses. They had women witnessing the resurrection before men. Now, that's too embarrassing. In that culture, here you got 12 apostles Jesus picked. They're all scared, hiding, huddled up in the corner of a room, locked in, and the women are marching down to the tomb. And in that culture, a woman's testimony is half of a man's testimony, and they're the first two testimonies on the list. You would never have it that way if it didn't really happen that way. They challenged the readers to check out the facts. 22 years after the event, Paul said, look, you don't believe me? There are 250 people still alive. Go and talk to them. They discarded long-held Jewish beliefs overnight. Now, how do you get people who haven't eaten pork for 1,400 years to start eating pork overnight? How do you get people who have been worshiping on the Sabbath, Saturday, the seventh day, to change to the first day of the week overnight? They include more than 30 historical people. More than 30 historical people whom we can check out from history and find out. So the early date, the early confirmation from Paul's writings, the authentic nature of their writings, the historical confirmation of other writings. Here are 31, to be precise, persons mentioned in the New Testament known from history. Two Agrippas, Ananias, Annas, Aretas, Bernice, Augustus, Caiaphas, Claudius, Drusilla, an Egyptian, Erastus, Felix, Gallio, Gamaliel, all of the Herods there, Herodias, Salome, James, John the Baptist, Judas of Galilee, Lysanias, Pilate, Quirinius, Porcius, Festus, Sergius, Paulus, Tiberius, Caesar. 31 people known to have lived outside of the New Testament. The early date of their writings, the early confirmation from Paul's writings, the authentic nature of their writings, the historical confirmation of other writings, and the non-mythological nature of the writings. You know why some people think the New Testament is myth? Listen to a great myth writer, C.S. Lewis. All I am in private life is a literary critic and historian. That's my job. And I'm prepared to say on that basis, if anyone thinks the Gospels are either legend or novels, then that person is simply showing his incompetence as a literary critic. I've read a great many novels, and I know a fair amount about legends that grew up among early people, and I know perfectly well that the Gospels are not that kind of stuff. If you're going to say the Gospels are myth, you better know what a myth is, said Lewis. I know what myths are. That's my job. And these guys don't. Noted Roman historians have confirmed the New Testament. This is a very interesting thing, because the first century is, of course, Roman history. Rome is in charge of the world. And there are Roman experts who are experts on the first century Roman history. And one of them is A. N. Sherwin White, Roman Society and Roman Law in the New Testament. Here's what he said. So it is astonishing that while Greco-Roman historians have been growing confidence, the 20th century study of the gospel narrative, starting from no less promising material, in fact, a whole lot more promising, have taken so gloomy a turn in the development of form criticism that the historical Christ is unknowable and the history of his mission cannot be written. This seems very curious to me. He calls the mythological view unbelievable. Roman historians literally drool over the kind of evidence we have for the New Testament compared to the kind of they have for things outside the New Testament. Here's another noted Roman historian. This is, in my opinion, the most important book written on this topic in the last 20 years. It was written in 1990. It's called Acts in the Setting of Hellenic History by Colin Hemmer. Here's what he said. The writer of the book of Acts is a first-rate historian because of his minute geographical knowledge of details that could be known only to the readers, because of specialized details known only to special groups, because of specifics of not widely known routes, places, and officials, because of correlation of dates in Acts with general history, because details appropriate to that period but not to others. He didn't have any watches on the actor in the Shakespearean play, for example. Events which reflect a sense of immediacy. Idioms of culture bespeak of first-hand knowledge. Verification of numerous details of times, people, and events of that period, best known only to contemporaries. I'll give you some examples. The author of the book of Acts knows which way the wind, the trade winds, blew. He knew how far off the shore, how deep the water was when they put it down for a sounding, you remember, when Paul was there in the last part of the book of Acts. He knew the nickname of the proconsular. He knew the certain disease that existed on an island there, something you would expect a doctor to have detailed knowledge of. Almost 100 details, minute details like this, are recorded in the book of Acts, not a single error recorded. He is a first-rate historian. Now, the historicity of Luke's gospel. It was written by a first-rate historian and confirmed by nearly 100 details. It claims to be accurate history. It's given an orderly account based on perfect understanding and eyewitnesses. It provides 8 historical crosshairs, persons known to have existed. It was written by AD 61 while numerous eyewitnesses were still alive. It accurately predicts the downfall of Jerusalem years in advance. Its historical picture has been confirmed by numerous archaeological finds. If Luke is an accurate historian, and he wrote Acts, and he wrote the Gospel of Luke, then Luke is accurate history. And Matthew and Mark say substantially the same thing as Luke. That's why they're called synoptic, same view, Gospels. So the Gospels are verified by virtue of Luke's authenticity. The early date, early confirmation, authentic nature, historical confirmation, non-mythological nature, noted Roman historians, and noted legal experts. At the turn of the century, Simon Greenleaf, professor of law at Harvard, had written a book, A Treatise on the Law of Evidence. He was the top expert on legal evidence in America, teaching at the most prestigious university. His students challenged him to apply the rules of evidence to the New Testament to see if the New Testament was authentic. He did, and he came up with this book, The Testimony of the Evangelist. Just read the blue. If they had thus testified on oath in a court of justice, it is believed that every honest and impartial man will act consistently with that result by receiving their testimony in all the extent of its import. If the New Testament writers were put on trial in a court, their testimony would stand, said Simon Greenleaf. All that Christianity asks of men on this subject is that they would be consistent with themselves, that they would treat the evidence as they treated the evidence of other things. Last two lines. The result, it is confidently believed, will be an undoubting conviction of their integrity, ability, and truth. If these critics would be honest and would apply the same rules of history to the New Testament as they do to other things, they would come out believing that it is authentic. Other attorneys have confirmed the same thing. One of the earliest was Thomas Sherlock, The Trial of the Witnesses of the Resurrection. Frank Morrison wrote a book, Who Moved the Stone? He was an attorney who was going to disprove Christianity and was converted to believe that Christianity is true by the evidence. John Warwick Montgomery, theologian and attorney, now an English barrister, wrote Christianity and History. Lee Strobel, skeptic, in his book, The Case for Christ. And on goes the list. The legal evidence is overwhelming. So we have the New Testament confirmed by early date of their writings, Paul's writings, authentic nature of their writing, historical confirmation of other writings, non-mythological nature, noted Roman historians, noted legal experts, and numerous archaeological finds. Somebody said every time the spade goes in the ground and is turned over, a critic is converted. It's a hyperbole, but it conveys the point. No archaeological evidence has ever refuted the Bible. Thousands of archaeological finds have supported the Bible. Here's a famous Bible archaeologist, Nelson Glick. As a matter of fact, however, it may be stated categorically that no archaeological discovery has ever controverted a biblical passage. None. At the same time, scores of archaeological findings have been made which confirmed in clear outline or exact detail historical statements in the Bible. The geography of Bible lands and visible remains of antiquity were gradually recorded until today. This is not a typo. More than 25,000 sites within this region and dating to Old Testament times in their broadest sense have been located. Donald Wiseman. In fact, here are some of the archaeological finds that relate to Jesus. His hometown, excavated at Nazareth, Pilate's inscription with Pilate's name in stone, Caiaphas' inscription, the high priest who tried him, Johanan, a crucifixion victim who died by crucifixion as Jesus did, the Nazareth decree, a slab of stone from Emperor Claudius that gives a hint of the empty tomb, possible the resurrection. This is saying nothing of the numerous places, waters, cities named in the Gospel, as well as many geographical and topological details. There's Jesus' hometown synagogue at Nazareth. There's Jerusalem where Jesus lived, taught, worked, wonders, and died. Here's Pontius Pilate, prefect of Judea, inscription. Here's the ossuary of Caiaphas, the high priest who tried Jesus. There's the Sea of Galilee where Jesus walked, fished, and talked. Here's a crucifixion victim. The bone on the right is the actual one, the reconstruction on the left, and how the nail went through the heel. Here's the site of an empty tomb like Jesus' tomb, and you can see where the stone would fit in that indentation in front of it. Now, last time I looked, U.S. News and World Report was not the fundamentalist journal. It's a liberal magazine, but here's what it says. In extraordinary ways, modern archaeology has affirmed the historical core of the Old and New Testaments, corroborating key portions of the stories of Israel's patriarchs, the Exodus, the Davidic monarch, and the life and times of Jesus. That's the whole Bible. That's the whole Bible right there, archaeology has confirmed. So we have archaeological finds, and finally, non-Christian sources. If you wiped out all of the New Testament and just looked at ancient history from 1st, 2nd century or so, what could you reconstruct of Jesus' life? He was born in Nazareth. He lived a virtuous life. He performed unusual feats. He introduced new teaching contrary to Judaism. He was crucified under Pontius Pilate. His disciples believed he rose from the dead. His disciples denied polytheism, which is what the Romans believed, or monotheism. His disciples worshipped Jesus. They must have thought he was God. His disciples and teaching spread rapidly. His followers believed they were immortal. They were going to live forever. And they had contempt for death. Kill me, I don't care. I'm going to go with him. And they renounced material goods. They weren't doing it for the money. 12 basic facts. Now here's what's called the basic fact hypothesis. If you take those 12 basic facts accepted by most Bible critics, general knowledge of the time outside the Bible, and apply the best explanation to it. What's the best explanation for those 12 basic facts? And the answer is that Jesus lived a virtuous, sinless life, performed miracles, died and rose from the dead, and transformed the early disciples. Let me summarize it. 10 good reasons for accepting the New Testament. There were 9 different authors. Name anything else from the ancient world like that. 27 different books. Nothing compares. Based on eyewitness testimony. Very rare. Early accepted Pauline letters confirmed them within 22 years of the events. There was no time for myth to develop. It takes 80 years for a myth to develop. They don't have 80 years in terms of when the writings occurred. The nature of the records are authentic. Non-Christian sources support them. Noted Roman historians confirm them. Noted legal experts have vouched for them. Many archaeological finds have supported them. Nothing like this exists for any other book from the ancient world. The New Testament is historically accurate. Hence, when the New Testament says Jesus said it, then Jesus actually said it. When it says Jesus did it, then Jesus actually did it. The life, death, and resurrection of Christ is not just a good story. It actually happened. It's not just a movie. It's history. Some implications. If the New Testament is reliable, then Jesus died and rose. The New Testament says Jesus claimed to be God and did miracles to prove it. If so, then Christianity is true. And if the New Testament is history, then the critic's view is fantasy.